We'll begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of August 2006, this is the Rain Report, available from both arnewsline.org and therainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Erecting antenna structures in urban settings has been a perennial challenge for amateur radio operators, especially nowadays. One man who knows is Brennan Price, N4QX, an ARRL volunteer counsel and an associate at Axon, Veltrop, and Harkritter. He began his 2006 Dayton Hamvention talk with a brief history of PRB1.
PRB1 was released in 1985. It had an immediate impact on several amateur cases. A couple of notable ones are noted here. An absolute prohibition by a municipality on amateur radio structures is not allowed. That's about as settled as you can get, and it was settled very early on in the Thurns case. That case actually was slated for oral argument the day after PRB1 was issued, and it had an immediate and profound effect on the outcome. The district court had found that without the expression of preemption by the FCC, that there was no reason to believe that Congress intended to preempt this area and an outright prohibition of amateur radio antennas. And once that PRB1 came out, this case was resolved on very favorable terms to Thurns. The Bodney case followed soon thereafter. Height limits that allowed only inadequate systems were prohibited. That was established fairly early on. The trick is demonstrating to a zoning body and subsequently to a court, if necessary, what exactly is inadequate. And I'll talk a little bit later about the necessity to have a good engineering study and a good engineering rationale. There were some initial good results, Thurns and Bodney being the two early cases which were good. There were a few cases which were not so good. And a lot of that difficulty stemmed from the fact that the FCC, in its opinion, establishing the PRB1 preemption, included language where they said it was appropriate to strike a balance between federal interests in effective amateur radio communications and local interests in zoning. And they came up with the text of the preemption, which states that a municipality must reasonably accommodate amateur radio installations, and the regulation must be the minimum practical regulation in order to address health, safety, or aesthetic concerns. Some courts have twisted the strike-a-balance language to amateurs' detriment. As a matter of fact, an early writer on this topic, also a student writer from back in 1988, twisted this logic against the amateurs. The Fourth Circuit held in a very early case, in the case of Williams versus the City of Columbia, South Carolina, that the law requires only that the city balance its interests against the federal interest. You can imagine what that outcome would likely be. If a city is saying, well, we want to zone everything, and all they have to do is say, well, the feds would like amateur radio operators to have their antennas, they think about it for a few minutes, and then they say, okay, we're right. That essentially satisfies the balancing test. Williams was a poor case. It was a poor result. It was problematic. Fortunately, courts outside of the Fourth Circuit have been cool to construe the PRB1 mandate as a balancing test. The best case on this issue is the Pentel versus City of Mendota Heights case. In the Pentel case, the Eighth Circuit found that reasonable accommodation is more rigorous than a balancing requirement. The plain text of the regulation says that a municipality shall reasonably accommodate amateur radio communications. That requires more than a balancing of interests approach. Pentel indicates that municipalities, in order to engage in a reasonable accommodation of an amateur radio facility, must consider the application for such a facility, make factual findings, and attempt to negotiate a compromise with the applicant. These are the three steps which are required and which an amateur seeking to erect an antenna or a tower should demand. The FCC also has rejected the balancing test approach. This is a very good result in a decision that was disappointing to a lot of people. In 1996, ARRL petitioned the FCC to expand the aegis of PRB1 to cover the restrictive covenants. The FCC declined to do so, suggested very strongly that as an express congressional expression of intent would be necessary. ARRL is pursuing that. Those things happen slowly. There's no reason to believe that that's going to happen anytime soon. But even in declining to extend PRB1 to CCNRs, the FCC did do us the favor of explicitly rejecting the balancing of interests approach that the Fourth Circuit took. It said in the decision, the express commission language requires reasonable accommodation, and it's clear that a balancing of interest approach is not appropriate. So the city can't just say, okay, we're considering what the feds want in an amateur radio service, and we're considering what we want. we're balancing it, and we're going to go with what we want. No. There is an absolute obligation for a municipality to provide reasonable accommodation with minimal practical regulation for their legitimate concerns. That background is the background against which two cases in 2001, which turned out very well for an amateur, took place. Palmer versus City of Saratoga Springs and Marchand versus Town of Hudson. These two cases are fairly interesting.
You are listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Palmer versus Saratoga Springs involved a case where a municipal zoning committee really went overboard. The amateur in that case moved to the city, applied for a permit to construct a tower, was flatly denied. No discussion, end of story. Palmer commenced litigation, continued on a little bit. It went to a settlement conference, and the judge suggested, you know, you really need to try to settle this, and you need to try to settle this in a way that reasonably accommodates communication. So they went back. The zoning board threw up a number of hoops for Palmer to jump through, held a series of meetings, and then after Palmer did everything they wanted him to do, they still denied the permit. And they denied it in a rather snide way. They actually wrote in their decision, if it weren't for the fact that the FCC were intruding on what we want to do, we wouldn't even be considering this to begin with. So the litigation continued. It was a one-day bench trial, and the decision was favorable to Palmer. Judge Bordeaux of the Northern District of New York acknowledged PRB1's preemptive effect, said that on the third prong of the Pentel test, requiring a city to attempt to negotiate a satisfactory resolution with the applicant, Saratoga Springs had failed miserably, saying they hadn't engaged in good faith negotiation. Part of my rationale for writing this article is for it to find its way eventually into the hands of municipal council, who can take a look at it and realize they have to do more than just say no. Marchand versus Town of Hudson was an interesting case. The amateur there is not Marchand. It was Jeremy Buller, K0TV in New Hampshire. Suzanne Marchand is a neighbor of his, and this is one of the rare cases in which the municipality and amateur and the amateur were on the same side of the dispute. Here, the Town of Hudson granted permission for Mr. Buller to erect a very substantial antenna structure. Suzanne Marchand appealed the grant to the first zoning of the Board of Appeals, then a district court or state court in New Hampshire. That court seized upon the balancing of interest tests. The district court said that the installation would upset the balance between federal interests promoting amateur operations and the legitimate interests of local governments in regulating local zoning matters. Never mind that the local government had already engaged in such regulation and granted the permit. So the Superior Court revoked the building permit, ordered Buller to dismantle his tower. New Hampshire, at the time, and still, is one of the 22 states which has a codification of PRB1 in its statute. The case went to the Supreme Court of New Hampshire. The Supreme Court of New Hampshire, citing both the federal preemption, citing PRB1, and New Hampshire's state statute, said that there's a clear directive that local regulations that operate to preclude communications are in direct conflict with federal objectives and are preempted. The New Hampshire Supreme Court came up with, I thought, the very nifty holding that a lower court action which precludes amateur radio communications is just as preempted as the municipal zoning board action that precludes amateur radio communication. So it basically reversed the decision, sent it back to the Zoning Board of Appeals on a fairly technical ground of New Hampshire zoning law. Mr. Buller ended up with a very favorable decision before the zoning board, and the case was not brought back before the Superior Court. Now, does that mean we always win? No. 2003 brought another case which turned out against the amateur. Boscher versus Township of Algoma was brought to the federal court of the Western District of Michigan. Mr. Boscher wanted to put up a 180-foot tower to operate FM simplex over a ridge that was some 3 miles to the south. And that was essentially the extent of the engineering justification he offered. Perhaps he did have a good case, although the judge in that case did his homework, suggested that a lower height with a better antenna utilizing various diffraction techniques or the common approach of speaking through repeaters would accommodate the same need. you have to read the decision in order to get a feel for how overwhelming the technical evidence was against the amateur in this case. The important point to drive home from all of this is it's incumbent on the amateur to make a good technical case to the zoning board, and ideally a public service case to the zoning board as well, in order to demonstrate why the installation is necessary in order to provide a reasonable accommodation. And in these negotiations, Jim mentioned at the beginning, he starts at 75 feet. We see if it sticks, and then if they holler, they look at the case law and sometimes come back with a lower number, which most people can live with. It's good to have several alternate plans and to maintain some degree of negotiating flexibility. That degree of flexibility wasn't evident in the Boster case, and the failure to present a technical case was also a key in the earlier Williams case from 1990. It cannot be overemphasized.
Brennan Price, N4QX, ARRL Volunteer Counsel, and an associate at Axon, Veltrop, and Harkritter. Next time, Brennan will bring us up to date as to more recent court cases involving amateur radio and PRB1. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2006, Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.